Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
People, welcome to it. Thursday edition of the program. Stoke and Josh rocking with you 10 to 2. And I appreciate y'all rocking here with us. Stoke out today, Will Peterson, sitting in of DenverSports.com. What up, Will? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Josh. It's going to be a good day, a big night in Denver sports.
Yes.
And then, of course, we're all just gearing up for this time tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow it'll be the big party down at El Patio, Denver, right across from Coors Field. We're going to walk you up to first pitch, so come see us, say hello. The drive will keep the party going until 6, plus we have that special prize that we're going to give away before the game actually starts, but you have to be present to win, so make sure you come find us on the rooftop at El Patio Denver. Make your plans right now to come see us, say hello, and kick it for opening day. Will, let's just start with the Rockies, and we're going to get into opening day, but they had the series finale last night. It was delayed due to rain. It was sloppy. It looked ugly. I don't know who watched that game, like 3,000 people, excuse me. It looked like an Athletics game early on here. And early on, it felt like the Rockies were going to go full Rockies on that thing. Down 4-0 after the second inning, but in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, the Rockies made their run, only to have a ball fall out of a catcher's mitt to end the game and lose in Rockies fashion. They're now 1-7 on the season, Will.
Yeah, it was funny because the sentiment last night was, well, they came close.
Yeah.
They had a nice comeback. It's like, well, they still lost. And I got to call you out because you did give them an extra loss. They're 1-6.
1-6. Seven games.
They'll be 1-7 by about 5:15 tomorrow.
The Rays will handle that next one.
It was so frustrating because it is the kind of game that can give you a little bit of momentum, and it can sort of wash the bad taste. When you're down 8-3 and you make it 8-8, yeah, no one's going to be happy after a 2-5 road trip. But a flight home to a home opener is going to be a lot better after an 8-3 comeback in the snow at Wrigley Field. Like, let's just be honest, that's human nature. You're going to feel okay about yourselves. And instead, they tie at 8-8, and then they go to the bottom of the eighth. First dude gets on a drop third strike, which is unfortunate, to say the least. It's a quirky rule. It's one of my least favorite rules in sports. Hey, your pitch was so filthy that the dude swung at it, the ball got away, and the guy gets to go to first. And then there's a base hit, and they bring the infield in, and Ryan McMahon makes this beautiful throw home, and the catcher just drops the baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, this is Rockies baseball, right when they give us hope.
Yeah.
However so briefly, they take it away. So it was the epitome of the road trip, I thought, to be quite honest, that hey, we actually didn't get blown out. We should feel great about ourselves. No, you still lost. You still lost 9-8. Just because they didn't lose by 7 runs, which feels like it's their average.
Right.
There's like 5 of these reporters, I put that in quote, more fanboys who want to be friends with the players on Twitter. It's just a great comeback, guys. Get them next time. You don't get that kind of leash when you start the season 1-5. You need to finish the job, and they didn't do it.
I don't know when, you know, as you said, reporters with quotes around that but started to get scared of losing their credentials, but seems to be a heavy, heavy crowd around the Rockies. I'm with you, man, I thought the same thing. And Stoke and I have been completely different, and I know you and I are kind of similar of like, I'm going to watch it. It's on. Like, what the heck else am I going to do?
There was no Avs or Nuggets last night.
Yeah, I'm just going to sit there and not do anything. So I've been the other end of this spectrum, though, Will. I can't take my eyes off of this thing. It's appointment television for the first time, and I don't know how long with the Colorado Rockies, because I know something's going to go wrong. I know it's going to make me giggle, and I know I get to tweet about it and watch my Twitter timeline blow up all over it. For those reasons alone, like, I am seriously all in on the Colorado Rockies.
Well, let's go through it. So they give up 14 runs in an inning on opening day.
Yep. Laughing stock of the league.
Then Nolan Jones makes the most little league of little league errors for a three-run inside the park home run to turn a 0-0 game into a 3-0 game.
Yep.
And then Michael Tolia hits a home run in a 10-0 game and goes into the dugout and puts on a ski helmet and ski goggles and starts dancing around. I don't know if you heard the Drive talking about this yesterday, and I tweeted about it and kind of went off. Like, the lack of leadership on that team, you are down 10-0, and you hit a home run, and you're going to go put on the cute, fun celebration in the dugout? Do you know what Nathan MacKinnon would do if you tried to do that on his team?
Rip it off you and throw it at your face.
Bingo. And where are the leaders on this team?
Yeah.
I mean, Chris Bryant, Charlie Blackmon, Kyle Freeland, heck, Bud Black. You're letting that kind of crap happen when you're down 10-0? Michael Tolia looked like a fool. And then last night, what does Michael Tolia do? Doesn't cut off a basic throw from Brenton Doyle.
And put his glove up as the cutoff target from Doyle.
And the ball goes away and another run scores. Guess how many runs they lost by? One run. So Michael Tolia, officially on my list for his actions over the last 36 hours. It's just honestly embarrassing behavior to think you should put on ski goggles and a helmet when you hit a home run down 10-0.
Agreed.
It shows that just like management, the players don't really get it.
Toglia was one of those guys that the Toglia family is friends with the Monfort family.
Mm.
And I know this firsthand from somebody who was in the room when the draft conversation started to happen about Toglia. And it was to a scout, to an analytic person that scouts other players, to tell the team if they should draft them or not. This person was told directly, don't even worry about the first round. We're taking Toglia. Family friends. I'm not kidding, Will. That is a direct quote.
I'm laughing because I'm not crying, right? Like, that is so depressing. We are making first-round draft picks based on who our family friends are?
100%.
Every time I think the stories about Monfort can't get any worse, you tell me one like that, and my outlook gets bleaker.
I just learned that this summer, and this person, obviously I can't tell you who it is. I'll tell you off-air, but this person was, like I said, an analytical scout for the team, and they were a part of the group that was asked to do laundry, that was asked to make coffee and dip runs, and those kind of things were a part of the job when they're supposed to be scouting for what the team is going to draft.
Let me ask you this. Does Dick Monfort like being the villain? Because I have come around to this notion that he is embracing this role as villain.
Yeah.
And those quotes to Troy Rank, however infuriating they were before opening day, specifically the one about, we don't need outside help. We've tried everything at altitude. Why would we need outside help? That made me want to chuck my drink across the room. I'm dead serious. Like, does he like being the villain at this point?
That's actually a really good question. Because, you know, there are people that lean into that. Like, hey, I'll wear the black hat. I'll wear it well, you know. I'll be proud to do that. Kobe Bryant was pretty good at being the villain when he was playing basketball. So that's a very good question.
We can revisit it. We got 4 hours. Yeah, I'm just curious.
I do want to revisit
that
because I had never thought that like, hey, I don't care that they don't like me. I kind of embrace that they don't like me because the turnstiles keep moving, my man. And that's the only thing that matters down there on 20th and Blake.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, 100%. So they'll be off today, and then they will get ready for the home opener. It's going to be a beautiful one, too. Like we said, we'll be at El Patio, so make your plans. Friday will be beautiful, and then as it feels like it's been throughout all of this winter and spring, the weekend will suck with the weather. So let's have some fun on a Friday over at El Patio. We would love to see you. We're off and rolling here. Will Peterson sitting in for Stoke today. We got a lot to do, including some more Rockies conversation, getting you set for a big night between the Nuggets and the Avalanche, who are both on the road and need victories. But I want to go to an NHL game last night. You got to hear how the Rangers and Devils game started, and it even involved our old buddy, Curtis McDermott. You'll hear that next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Josh.
Last night we let the liquor talk. I can't remember everything we said, but we said it all.
Last night, Will, the Devils and Rangers let their fists talk, and it was awesome. I am pro fighting guy in hockey. You know me a little bit, so that probably doesn't surprise you.
No, not at all.
How do you feel about just in general fights in hockey? There's still that group that's like, take it out of the game, it's dirty. And then the group that's like, they police themselves, it's the right way. Where do you land?
I land if there's a purpose for said fight, I'm cool with
it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think dropping gloves for the sake of it makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
But I've seen games where Nathan MacKinnon's fought dudes. Right. You know, Gabe Landeskog famously has fought dudes. And that to me kills the argument that, we need to take it out of the game. It's like, well, the best player on earth is willing to drop gloves if you tick him off. So it's still part of the game to that extent. But, yeah, tell me more about last night, because I saw some clips of this, but I don't really know the full context.
And so there was I guess there's some reasoning here. Their last game on March 11th, Rempe refused to fight McDermott. So that's still lingering. Like, hey, you didn't accept my fight challenge. And, of course,
Former Av, right. People will remember, he's the dude who fell over backwards with the Stanley
Cup. Right, that's right.
In the viral clip. And he played like 6 minutes a game, but if they ever needed to go kick someone's butt, they called on McDermott.
And that's kind of his role with the New Jersey Devils as well. And so there was that. Rempe also hit a defenseman, knocked him out of the game with a high elbow, and it actually ended up with a suspension there for the big fella from the New York Rangers. So you go now, fast forward to, what was yesterday, April 3rd. The first game since, it's on TNT. The puck's about to drop, and this is what went down.
Square Garden has seen its fair share of bouts on the canvas, on the ice. No undercard tonight. Rempe and McDermott, the main event to open the hockey game.
Both sides. Lazar on the other side as well.
Jimmy Vesey and Lazar. Gaudreau has dropped him with Kevin Ball as well. Now it's 5-on-5. McDermott and Rempe exchanging blows. But everybody has gloves off at the Garden. John Marino, there's only four officials, there's five fights. They're trying to break up what they can. Meanwhile, Rempe and McDermott still throwing it. DeAndre Miller got the better of John Marino down on the other end. As McDermott still feeding rights to Rempe. The other four are all done. The main event's still going.
This is unbelievable. Holy jump, and what a start to this one right here with McDermott.
This is a marathon between Rempe and McDermott.
Rempe's visor down. Oh, they gotta be out of gas. Completely out of gas. Completely out of gas. Holy jump!
And that's exactly what they were. You almost got a second holy jumping in there from the TNT crew. That was the big one. But man, there's a couple of there's views of the fight up close from like an on-ice camera, but then there's some fans that are up in the upper bowls that show the whole thing. And I mean, Will, it's a yard sale. The sticks, gloves everywhere, and then dudes just beating the you-know-what out of one another with, of course, that heavyweight. And I know Rempe's like the big star in the NHL. He's the big new tough guy, but Curtis McDermott handled his business in that one last night.
Yeah, listen, man, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it the first 2 seconds of the game, right? I'm a big don't delay the inevitable guy.
Yeah.
So just send out the five dudes on each side who want to go, put on the yard sale, and I love the announcer going, it's 5-on-5, you know, like that, the realization that, every single dude on the ice is fighting. The only thing that would have made it better, of course, is if the goalies would have gone too. Let's make it 6-on-6, but yeah, just get it out of there. I understand eight guys got ejected, and it was the talk of the hockey world last night, maybe the talk of the sports world last night. I think, too, when you see something like this, and we're watching it now live in studio, you realize that, I mean, this is a street brawl, dude.
These dudes
take their gloves off, and they're just punching each other in the face. The helmet provides a little bit of protection, but honestly, you'd think they'd want to get the helmets off because the worst thing you want to do is hit your hand on a helmet. That's a good way to break your hand. So,
I'd rather my face hurt than my hand.
Yeah, I think there is a moment for this in the game, and you provided the background of it. That being said, I am looking forward to the playoffs and watching them score goals and not talking about brawls. I think we're kind of in that silly season where everyone's just ready for the playoffs to start.
You're right.
And we're kind of grinding down these last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of stuff hockey produces.
Drew Spivak, you are a hockey guy. You are a big-time hockey fan. Where do you fall on the fights, the 5-on-5 that we saw? Does it take away from the game? Does it add to the game? What do you think?
No, stuff like last night when you see, you know, it's kind of a had-to-happen type of fight, I'm totally cool with. And fights that happen, I think, in the spur-of-the-moment type things, when you're defending, you know, your star player, something like that is kind of cool. Where I don't get down with the fighting in hockey is when it's just two tough guys that are like, hey, you want to go? You want to go? All right, let's go. It just interrupts the flow of the game. It's pointless. It's stupid. But the rest of ice, the organic stuff, I'm all in on. I love watching that stuff.
And you and I had actually talked about this before, Drew. Was it a Blackhawks game? Josh Manson took a fight because I think the Avs were up like 3-0.
Yes.
And Manson, you know, Chicago Blackhawk player, does the little tap. Hey, let's throw down for our side. That I don't like that either.
I don't know. I can't stand that stuff.
It's got to be a purpose. There's got to be a reason behind it. And don't interrupt the flow of the game. That's another great point, Drew. Go ahead.
Well, and I just want to say, too, guys, what made the Red Wings and Avs rivalry so famous? Of course they played a lot of great playoff series, but it is the all-out brawls you think of when you think of that rivalry over the years. Juan Osgood, I believe Juan Mike Vernon going at it, Claude Lemieux, Chris Draper. I mean, the list goes on and on. It was the brawls, I feel like they mostly took place in Detroit, that sort of made that rivalry. I mean, guys, remember, there was a time when people talked about Red Wings Avs in the same breath as Yankees Red Sox and UNC Duke. It was that big, and it was that nationally recognized as maybe one of the greatest rivalries in sports, and it was the fighting that drove it.
How do you guys feel about it out there? Text line's always open, 303-713-1043, powered by Ramos Law. You can always watch the show on Twitch as well and comment over there, twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. I also really loved the penalty box before everybody got thrown out. They all go to the box, and it's, you know, shoulder to shoulder sitting in there, and every player from both the Devils and both the New York Rangers, just a smirk on their face of like, y'all see what we just did?
We're pretty proud of ourselves. Yeah, I saw some good memes like, when you pay the Uber driver extra, Sephora, you can sit in the back. Because these dudes in the penalty box. I mean, that penalty box is not designed for four dudes. And we've all been in that Uber before where it's like, this ain't designed for this many people. So, yeah, it was a good brawl. But again, I'm on Denver Sports Tonight a lot, 6 to 7 here on The Fan. And I was joking with Cello the other day. Like, if you could take a time machine to 3 weeks from today, would you do it?
Just to get into the...
You're not supposed to wish your life away. I get it.
Yeah.
But we're going to be drinking out of a fire hose at the end of April. Mm-hmm. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, NFL draft. And I tell you what, the Nuggets, they're ready for the playoffs. Yeah. The Avs, they're ready for the playoffs. And Broncos country is ready for the draft to get here. So it's going to be a fun 3 weeks, don't get me wrong. But there's also elements of... Calendar's April 4th. That'd be cool if it said April 24th.
I think if I had some sort of time machine, I would probably use it to get me to vacation sooner. But I get what you're saying. Like, I'd like to be on a beach maybe watching some playoff games.
Yeah, well, we'll have two parades and then we can all do that. How's that sound?
That sounds great to me. All right, well, let's talk a little Nuggets and Avs as well. And this is something that you're kind of hinting at it right here. As the regular season winds down, you've kind of seen it from both the Nuggets and the Avs of, hey, hurry up and get here. Hurry up and get here. There's just not as much juice, especially where the Nuggets are coming off the championship run. Of course, the Avalanche know that. As of right now, Will, April 4th, who do you feel better about as this regular season winds down, the Denver Nuggets or the Colorado Avalanche?
I think the Nuggets, provided Jamal Murray is healthy. Okay. That's sort of the wild card now, Josh, because he's missed six in a row. He's questionable for tonight in L.A. against the Clippers, and you're going to have a week off for the play-in tournament. So do you really want Jamal Murray to go a month without playing meaningful minutes, especially because let's say they get the two, okay? Meet in the middle. Some people think they'll get the one. They could get as low as the three. Let's say they get the two. Well, the Phoenix Suns could be the seven and emerge from the play-in tournament. Phoenix has already beaten you twice on your home court post All-Star break. Do you really want game one, round one to be Jamal's first game back and the Suns steal that one and all of a sudden they've beaten you three times in a row at Ball Arena. They've stolen home court advantage from you. Just like that, your season feels a little bit on the brink. That's the worst case scenario. I get it, but I do feel better about the Nuggets. I will feel even that much better if Jamal can play in half of these final six games.
Yeah, I don't know if I need half, but I certainly like to see him tonight, I think, is a game. Minnesota is a week from today, 6 days from today. The final matchup with the Timberwolves, which is obviously huge and crucial for those seedings conversations that you're just talking about. So I decided yesterday that health was the prioritization for me because it was AG just falling down on his right hip. And that was literally the moment where I'm like, okay, done. Don't care. These seven games don't matter. Let's get to the postseason. 1, 2, or 3. I like who the Denver Nuggets can be, who they can beat. And I'm also not afraid of the Phoenix Suns like I feel a lot of folks are here in this market.
Not afraid. Afraid's the wrong word, but I'm also not naive. We know what they've done after the All-Star break. They've beaten them twice here. And if Jamal's not out there and they beat him a third time in game one, that flips that series on its head. There's no other way to slice that. losing home court in the first two games is bad. It's bad. You don't want to go to the Desert Tide 1-1. You want to go up 2-0 like they did last year, because then they could afford to lose two, and then they came back and won games 5 and 6.
We're going to revisit that conversation because there's another layer to it of how worried will we be if Val returns and Jamal returns, and they just look like the teams that we've all fallen in love with throughout this year. So we'll revisit that. But next, it's NFL Network's Lance Zierlein has his latest mock out, and what he has the Broncos doing, I believe, would leave a lot of Broncos country upset, angry, and confused. We'll tell you what it is next.
It's Stokely and Josh on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
We're going to get to Lance Zierlein's mock draft here in just a second of the NFL Network. It's his third version, and I think what he has the Broncos doing is absolutely crazy. We'll get to that in a moment, but we have to tell you, the Broncos have signed a new player. Well, this is the sixth player that they've brought in here via free agency, and if our research is correct, this guy doesn't even have any ties to New Orleans, so good luck making the roster, dude. It is veteran center Sam Mustipher. Mustipher, 27 years old. He played with Baltimore in 2023 after his first three seasons were in Chicago with the Bears. Played in 52 games. He started 42 of those. And as it's being reported by Parker Gabriel, where's Parker at? The Denver Post?
I believe the Post.
Of the Post. It's a veteran option in the middle for the Broncos. So now you look at what's on the roster at the center position. It's Alex Forsythe, it's Luke Wattenberg, and what I believe is the leader in the clubhouse to be your starting center, now Sam Mustipher, coming over from Baltimore.
Yeah, I think this is big news. We all assumed it would be Alex Forsythe and Luke Wattenberg competing for this center spot, but you look at what Sam Mustipher has done, 52 games, 42 starts total. Last time I checked, that's a starter.
Yeah, it is.
When you're starting 80% of the games, you are a starter. And if you're Sam Mustipher, you're looking around the league going, who doesn't have a center? Oh, that team that lost Lloyd Cushenberry and has two late-round picks is supposedly competing for this job. I think Sam Mustipher now slots in between Quinn Meinerz and Ben Powers. That would be my gut week one of next year. This is a bad day to be Wattenberg. It's a bad day to be Forsythe. They thought they were going to get a competition, and Sean Payton said, nah, not so fast. Listen, could Sam Mustipher come into camp and start snapping the ball over Sparky Stitty's head? Yeah. I don't know. And I was going to say Jaden Daniels, but I didn't want to be that guy quite yet.
That's because Jaden Daniels is athletic. He'd jump up and catch it.
But the Broncos O-line, what were they, Josh, last year? They were nothing but cohesive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the same five dudes almost every single week till the very end.
Yeah.
I think Sean Payton probably appreciated that and liked it. He's bringing back four of them. Now maybe Mustipher, the new center, rather than the other two we thought who were going to compete.
Well, and how about this, Will? The fact that now you're going from left to right, Bowles, Powers, Mustipher, Miners, McGlinchey. Those are all veteran players. And even if it is Stidham, old Sparky back there, or it's Jaden Daniels, or Bo Nix, or Michael Penix Jr., whatever April brings us, that's obviously a young guy, even in Jared Stidham. Sure, he's been around, but he hasn't seen a lot of real live NFL action. And now you got to force a wall in front of you that has some experience, have seen some things, can maybe help out a quarterback identifying pre-snap things, talking through it on the sideline after the fact that it has happened. So I like this move a lot, too. I think this is smart from Sean Payton to add a veteran presence to this group, to keep it veteran across. Then you have the luxury of continuing to develop a Luke Wattenberg and a Forsythe that you drafted just a year ago.
Yeah.
So I love this move.
You make a really good point. If you're going to go rookie QB, go veteran offensive line. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're going to have. And the growing pains will be there, but they will be less when the five protecting you have been in this league for quite some time.
Yeah. All right. So that's the latest. How do you feel about a Broncos country? It's an offensive lineman, but does it get the needle moving for you? He's coming over and will probably be the starter once we get to camp coming up in August. Real fast, I just saw this. Drew is letting us know that Val, so he's on the ice here in Denver. Right now, as of this morning, it was reported that he'd be able to join the team in Minnesota, who they play tonight, and then hope to play tomorrow. Looks like he is not going to be in the lineup tonight if he's on the ice in Denver in the last 15 minutes.
I don't know. Kroenke's got what, 6-7 privates?
I guess it's only a couple-hour flight.
Yeah,
right?
He could get a good skate in and then hop on a bird. No, but I think, well, two things here. First of all, it's disappointing he's not with the team because that was... The report was that he was going to be with the team. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, another hard session today, and then just meet the team in Edmonton should be still good to go for tomorrow night. So in some senses, it's like, nah, I don't want to see him over at Family Sports. And in other senses, it's like, as long as he's on the ice in Edmonton, I don't really care the route he takes to get there in the next 36 hours.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it's tonight they're going Anan in net. Tomorrow will be Georgiev in net. Edmonton, obviously, a little bit more of a threat for the Colorado Avalanche. So big one here in the back-to-back.
That's a lot of Anan in time, bro, though. I mean, that's how many starts in a, or how many games in a row he's played now? Three?
Is it three?
Well, he came in the Nashville game after the Georgiev penalty. Mm-hmm. Then he played the other night against Columbus. Now he's playing tonight against Minnesota. I don't think there's a goalie controversy. I don't think there should be a goalie controversy. When your backup has now been in there three games in a row, that's not really a backup anymore.
Well, if they weren't going to Edmonton tomorrow night, if the Edmonton game was on Saturday or Sunday afternoon, sure, it'd be Alexander in double games.
It's just if you're Georgiev today, you're going, it's a lot of guy behind me, Ty.
Really? Starting to look over your shoulder a little bit more?
I would think so.
Okay. I think it's going to be a whole lot of Georgiev in the postseason. You don't think Anan plays at all in the postseason, do you?
Yeah, they won a cup 2 years ago with both goalies playing a fair amount.
But that's because, Grubb with the eye and all the stuff that happened there.
Or Darcy
with the eye, excuse me.
Yeah, but Frankie stepped in nicely and proved you can win a cup with two goalies. So, Josh, if they play 24 games, because they played 20 last time, but they were dominant. Let's say 24 to win a cup this year. Georgiev ain't playing all 24.
I mean, you're not going back-to-back. You're going to get a day off. How much rest do these guys freaking need, bro?
I'm telling you they're going to need Eustace Annan for 6 to 8 games. I think it follows a very similar script to the Darcy Kemper, Pavel Francouz that we saw 2 years ago. I'm not convinced he's dominant enough to warrant playing every single game. There are going to be hiccups where Bednar's going to have to shuffle those goalies around a little bit.
All right, 303-713-1043. Broncos have a new center, Val. Not looking like he is going to be on the ice tonight in Minnesota. Cross your fingers, knock on wood, whatever it is you do, that he'll be up in Edmonton tomorrow night for that second night of a back-to-back. All right, let's start to look at this mock draft a little bit. So it's Lance Erline, NFL Network. He's got the first three picks as quarterbacks. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. But Will, it's not the New England Patriots that are selecting Drake May. It is the New York Football Giants.
Okay.
They make the trade with the Patriots to get up there. And the Giants they've been the wild card almost, right? You know the top three won a quarterback. You know that the Minnesota Vikings won a quarterback and the Broncos won a quarterback. It feels like the Giants and the Raiders are like the jokers of the hand. You don't really know what they're going to do at 6 or at 13 there. So Lance has Drake May going to New York. Then Minnesota gets J.J. McCarthy. So now four straight quarterbacks. The Giants have jumped up and made a move. That leaves Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. available for the Broncos and the Raiders. But what are the Patriots going to do that they still need a quarterback? He's got the Patriots taking a wide receiver, Malik Nabers, at number 6. So the Patriots don't go quarterback. They're in full rebuild mode. Like, their head coach is saying it. We talked about that on the show. Like, what would you prefer? How Mayo's doing it or how Peyton's doing it by, poo-pooing the idea of a rebuild as where Mayo is embracing it and literally telling his fans, you have to be patient with us.
Yeah, but Mayo just started. He's got a little more of a leash to do that, whereas Peyton was brought here to win now, is getting $18 million a year, left the Fox set for this gig, made the playoffs almost every single year in New Orleans. There's just a difference in the phase of the careers they're at between Jerod Mayo and Sean Peyton.
Yeah, but there's not much of a difference in the rosters that they have.
There's not, but one guy is willing to acknowledge that, and the other one said, I won 8 games with Russell Wilson. I can win 11 games with a rookie. We'll wait and see, right? As Gary Kubiak would say, we're fixing to find out.
That's right. At number 10, I'm just telling you what the Jets do because I know he's your guy. Brock Bowers was selected here by the New York Jets, which is probably a pretty smart move to go get Aaron Rodgers, somebody to throw the football to, something that the Green Bay Packers never did.
Yeah, poor Brock Bowers. I mean, the Jets just seem like a cursed franchise, and I'll believe it when I see it that Aaron Rodgers is going to be himself ever again.
Okay.
You don't pop an Achilles at almost 40 and just come back the next year and totally fine. Even that whole charade, he was going to come back last year, that was absurd. We'll believe it when we see it, but name me the last Jets draft pick that's been excited that they ended up in New York. It's been a minute.
Yeah. All right, so that leads us now at 11. It's that trade with the Vikings and Cardinals. So the Cardinals are down there, and they take Dallas Turner, the edge rusher from Alabama, who's been mocked to the Broncos in a couple of different instances. So we're at 12. We're with the Denver Broncos on the clock, and as I mentioned, I have no idea why this pick would be made that Lance Zierlein has the Broncos making. We're going to tell you who it is next.
You're listening to Stokely and Josh on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
All right, it's 10:45. We're going to check in on the RamosLaw.com text line coming up, 303-713-1043. Oh, wow, just somebody responding to the big fight between the Rangers and the Devils. Last night's fight looked stupid and pre-planned. It definitely was pre-planned, but if it looks stupid to you, I guess I can't tell you you're wrong, but I thought it looked awesome. You want to join the show, that's how you do it, right there. Text in or watch the show over on Twitch, twitch.tv/DenverSportsCom. You can see us, hang out in the chat room, and kick it right there. We're talking about Lance Zierlein's mock draft. NFL Network's Lance Zierlein had his third version of the mock draft, and we're all the way down at the Broncos. After four quarterbacks went 1, 2, 3, 4, with the Giants making a trade up to get number three out of New England's hands and use that to select Drake May. So we're down to number 12, Will.
Okay.
Bo Nix is on the board. Michael Penix Jr. is on the board. But what Lance Zierlein has the Denver Broncos doing is selecting Quinyon Mitchell, a cornerback out of Toledo. He's getting hot right now because he just got cleared from an injury. He had some box jump that was, I don't know, I saw it all over the internet.
Bro, and Broncos country made riot. Sorry, I'm going to try to let you finish, but you got me fired up.
I had the exact same reaction when I saw this for the first time. That's what I said, angry, upset, confused. If the Broncos at 12 selected a cornerback, you're absolutely right. Pitchforks and freaking fire on the march down to Dove Valley. Why in the world would they select a cornerback at number 12 in this year's draft?
No disrespect, but out of Toledo. Come on, man. If you're thinking a corner out of Georgia, Bama, or LSU, or Auburn, at least I've probably heard of him or I've watched him play before. You know how many Toledo Rockets games I watched last year? Zero. Goose egg.
Yeah.
Kid may be a first-round talent, but listen, Josh, it does not fill a huge need. I understand they need a number two corner. But Pat Surtain's record in Broncos Orange and Blue is 20-31. Cornerback does not impact the game. Pat's an all-pro. He's the best player on the team. And they're still 11 games under 500 in his 3 years here. If they take another corner in round one, I may go buy a Detroit Lions jersey. I'm going to find a new team.
Like we did with the Braves in baseball yesterday?
It might be the play. I mean, I say it like half jokingly, but half bang my head against the wall as a fan of the Denver Broncos. And I know Lance Zierlein is well-connected and a big name and does a lot of mock drafts. But if he has actual info they're going to take a corner, that would shock me. That would just shock me. I think this is a shot in the dark. It's to get people like you and I talking, and I think there's a 0.1% chance. I've already forgot his name, but I'm going to call him Toledo is actually the pick.
It's one of the texters says he's so hot right now. He is. He's the hot cornerback right now, but you're 100% spot on. Broncos country would be furious. We would be furious here if that is the selection. They do need another corner. In the first round, get the heck out of here with that nonsense. I'm telling you, Will, if the first round pick is not an offensive player or they don't have one because they've traded back to acquire more assets, I'm going to be mad at that alone. Like, it needs to be somebody on the offensive end. A quarterback first and foremost. If Brock Bowers falls, pick him and then figure out what you're going to do in the later rounds. This defense needs some help. But if you think the defense of the Denver Broncos is the biggest problem on this team, then we haven't been watching the same games.
I mean, their quarterback room is Sparky Stitty and Ben DiNucci.
Yeah.
That's all you need to say. It's the worst quarterback room in the NFL as we sit here today on April 4th. It is literally the worst group of QBs in the entire league. I'm with you. It needs to be on offense, but I think we can simplify it. It needs to be a quarterback unless the tight end's initials are BB. And that's the only exception. Only exception would be Brock Bowers with hopefully a plan to maybe get back up to the top of the second. You and I have talked about this before and see if Penix or Nix will slip to you at the top of the second. It's going to take some creativity, but maybe Cortland Sutton in a third round pick to get to the top of the second round could do that. But yeah, it doesn't even need to be as broad as they have to take offense. They have to take a quarterback unless Brock Bowers is just that tempting.
And it's also one of the texters wrote this, 720 texter. They select Mitchell because George Payton is in charge of this particular draft. Draft pick. I don't know if you're trying to be funny or sarcastic, but he's not. It would be, I know where they're coming from. Like, that has George Payton vibes and feelings all over it, because you know what it is, Will? It's a safe pick. And that's what he made with Patrick Surtain the second. I don't know. You can say it's worked out because of how good he is, but you said it earlier and you're 100% accurate. How many games has Pat Surtain helped the Broncos win?
Yeah, you know what wasn't safe? Trading three players and four picks for Russell Wilson. How'd that work out? Mm-hmm. You know what wasn't safe? Hiring Aaron Rodgers' friend and then not being able to get Aaron Rodgers to come here, and Nathaniel Hackett's a buffoon who gets fired after 15 games. Yeah. You know what wasn't safe? Giving Russell Wilson $250 million before he ever played a snap.
Mm-hmm.
So, to the texter's point, George Payton probably wants to be safe now to try to keep his job, which I've gone on the how does George Payton have a job rant 273 times. You don't need to hear it a 274th time, but there is some speculation he could get fired after the NFL draft, and that may depend on what happens in this first round. And maybe George Payton is thinking, I get to keep my job if the pick is more safe, whereas Sean Payton is thinking, no. We got to go bold in this first round, maybe even trade up to four with the Cardinals to get a QB. We're not going safe, and that could ultimately be the wedge that makes George Payton get fired come May 1st.
This is a good text from the 331. I always like these texts. This is why you guys are on the radio instead of pro personnel departments of an NFL team. I don't know if texters know this, but we can see their other text. This person also has text, go Duke and let's go Yankees, in the same thread here. So I'm sorry to tell you this, but I'm not sure I'm going to take what you say too serious if those are the teams you're rooting for, my guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to bag on the texter too much. You kind of did it for me, but
they're bagging on us. This is a two-way street, people.
I'll just say this. Josh and I could have done as good a job as George Payton has done as the Broncos GM.
Yeah.
And that's not because we're some football insiders. That's because he's been really bad as the GM. I mean, his drafts have been mediocre at best. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 2021 draft is the only one saving him, but 22 and 23 look like total busts. And his big moves have quite literally become some of the worst in NFL history. Worst trade, worst contract, worst head coaching hire. So it's not that just you and I could have done a better job. Go Yankees, go Duke dude probably could have done a better job. This guy's, being an NFL GM is not brain surgery. It's not being an astronaut.
No.
Let's not put it up there with some of the toughest jobs on earth. It's throwing darts and hoping you hit. Mm-hmm. And right now, George Payton has missed the dartboard more often than he's hit it.
It's also a situation, real quick, back to Lance's mock. Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. were not selected in the first round. So it's not saying, hey, there's not a play for the Broncos to get a quarterback. Who knows what it looks like in round two if this thing were to go the way that Lance sees it. But, yeah, a cornerback, that would be very disappointing from the Broncos end of things.
How frustrated would you be if they took Nix or Penix at 12? Would those two feel like a reach to you at 12?
Penix for sure right now, but I mean, what are we, 3 weeks away? 3 weeks ago, I thought J.J. McCarthy was a reach at 12. Now, we'd be fortunate in the eyes of many to get J.J. McCarthy at 12. Last week, I thought Bo Nix was a reach at 12, and here we are like, yeah, maybe that's the play at 12. 2 weeks from now, if Penix keeps climbing the way he's climbed this week after his pro day and medicals from the combine were clear, it might feel like that's the play at 12 too. But right now, yeah, it feels like a reach for me. What about you?
Yeah, it'd feel like a reach for either one. It's would feel so much better if you got one of the two of them in the 20s or the 30s and added draft capital. Mm-hmm. I'm actually getting to the point, Josh, where I want them to trade up or trade back. I think 12 is this kind of purgatory. Mm. If you're going to trade up and go all in, trade up and go all in. If you're going to trade back and get a second rounder and still land your QB, then do that, because you just added a second round pick that you didn't have. But just selecting Nix or Penix straight up at 12, I'll be happy because they took a quarterback. That's what I've wanted them to do, but I'll still feel like there's a little to be desired.
Yeah, I've pretty much decided I don't think they need to make the play up because of how much it would cost. And me personally, I don't believe that J.J. McCarthy is this huge outlier from Bo Nix and Michael Penix Jr. He might be a tier up from who they are, but I don't think it's several tiers up from who they are. And then if you have to give up two first picks, two future first to do that, I just don't think that the talent is a big enough difference for me to throw all that at the table.
Yeah, but what if the Commanders take McCarthy at two?
And then Jaden's there?
And then Jaden is there at 4. Does that change your mind?
That changes my mind.
Because it changes my mind.
We're going to have that conversation a little bit later as well, because Jaden is something I would love to see in blue and orange here if the Broncos can find a way to go land the Heisman Winner Trophy out of LSU. All right, we got to congratulate Park Hill's own Chauncey Billups, who's going to go into the Basketball Hall of Fame. And it got us thinking, how many current Hall of Famers are rocking Denver on their jerseys right now? We're going to go over that list coming up next.